Okay, well, for those of you who are new, this is our 229th call. We had originally intended this cohort, with the coming cohorts of 10, to prepare us for the next RFA, which is a request for, used to be called RFPs, which is a request for applications. This session was going to prepare us to answer the questions posed by for the next RFA, in particular the ranking criteria questions, and get people prepared for that. It was also designed to help people who are in programs to exchange ideas, to see if we can get some new ideas from some of the other grantees. Of course, those who are new to the program are just learning all about this, about environmental workforce development job training. And then we've got many people who have lots of experience and can help us as mentors. And people like Jeff and Deborah are a huge assistance to us, and grantees who have been through this for a while. Someone's microphone is chirping, but so let's just kind of deal with that. I apologize for that. But if you're in a large room or have an open mic, you might have to silence your phone, but don't put us on hold. We always start out these sessions with news from Washington. And Heather, can you give us, well, first of all, let me introduce Channing Shepherd. Channing is going to be replacing Rachel Condon next fall, and working with all of us, helping us out on our programs, and he's with EPA. Channing, can you introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi, everybody. Like you said, my name is Channing Shepherd. I just started with the Brownfields program at EPA in Washington, D.C., and I'll be taking over for Rachel Condon for the Workforce Development and Job Training Program. So I look forward to working with y'all.
You're going to love this, because we're kind of a small group. We've got about 50 of us, 50 grantees. They're active. And we'll talk about this in a minute. We get together once a year. We try to get together every other week on these informal calls. But we get to know each other and find out what each other are doing. We try to network and find out what works, what doesn't work. Try to exchange these ideas on a very informal basis. And we try to get to know each other, see if we could help each other in different ways. With that, let me turn it over to Heather, to Jean Nebel. She normally talks about news from Washington, but we've started that. Heather, do you want to continue with...
Absolutely. I do have kind of an unusual request for all those that are listening today, because we are getting a little bit of feedback from something today. If you have the ability to mute your phone without putting it on speaker, if you would mind doing that, we would greatly appreciate it. Don't forget to unmute yourself, though, if you've got something to share with us. I know a lot of us do that kind of a standard operating procedure, probably especially now in this remote world, as we're doing our work, but that might be something to keep in mind, although there's a possibility it could be a quirk going on with the system. So we do appreciate your understanding and your help while during this call. But thank you guys. So from HQ, you know, Channing sent me a nice email this morning and just said, you know, there's nothing really new from HQ at this time. Always remember, though, that if you guys have any updates, any questions, any changes going on, please reach out to your regional coordinators. They really are your best friends. And keeping them in the loop and updated with what's going on with your programs is going to make it more successful during these challenging times. And then always, you know, we always follow it up with that reminder too as well. We hope everybody's staying safe and following the rules and regulations of your local ordinances in terms of responding to the coronavirus type of situation. That's kind of been a standard message that, you know, has been passed along from early on, and we just keep repeating it, reminding you guys as we go through these times. From the HMCRI side of things, you know, we've been tinkering on business as usual here on our side, so we've got a couple of background things, projects that we're working on. Thank you for those who have sent some pictures in. We are in the process of revamping our website, and so I did post out on the listserv a couple weeks ago a call for pictures. So if anybody has any that they have access to right now that really kind of showcase your program or what our students do and you are willing to share, we would really appreciate them. I bounce them over to our technologist, he's the one that's working on the website designs. So if anybody currently has access to any pictures that they'd be willing to share with us to put on the website, please send them to hkvallou@eicc.edu. We usually repeat my email a couple times in this, but you also get it in any of your reminders from the listserv posts or anything like that. The next thing that we've been working on as well is the all-grantee meeting. So for those of you that might be joining us new, the all-grantee meeting is a fantastic get-together that we hold every year to really let us do networking, one-on-one, peer-to-peer sharing, as well as just really exploring topics that are relevant to the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Program. We typically hold that in August, and in normal years, it's held in Alexandria, Virginia. But as you know, this is not a normal year, so we're a little bit in transient times. At this point, we are still exploring our options. I think we're going to do kind of an informal scan of all of you that are on the phone call today to let us know what things are looking like in August, what are your guys' feelings in terms of virtual versus in-person. And then we can kind of take that and hopefully formalize our decision in the next 2 weeks for what is actually going to happen for the all-grantee meeting. But regardless, if you're interested in attending, and I know things are a little scary right now because we're not sure what August is going to look like, but, you know, if you have some type of interest, if you wouldn't mind sending me an email real quick just saying, hey, I am interested in it, or may not be 100% sure. It depends on what my organization's rules are at that time, but I'm potentially interested in finding whether it's a virtual option or in person. Just shoot me a real quick email with that type of information, because what it does is it's kind of compiling a list of just how many folks we're looking at, and it'll kind of help with some of those decisions. I've had a few that have said, oh, yeah, you know, we're looking forward to it. A couple say, if you do something not in person, I can do a virtual thing, but I can't really do an in-person thing. You know, just shoot me a message. I would really appreciate it. What it just does is help us compile some information. By no means is it a firm commitment. By no means is it, you know, you're writing it in stone. That's going to happen. But what it is helping us gauge general interest, and that's really important to us right now. So, again, that can just be sent to hkvallou@eicc.edu. And we really appreciate your time and patience with having kind of the official decision come out in terms of the all-grantee meeting. And we'll go from there. So, Mike, I'm going to turn it back over to you.
Okay. Of course, we all, the way we are today, it looks pretty ominous in terms of getting in together in person. This is something we really look forward to, but we're going to try to do the best we can, and we're taking two paths, which may turn into one path fairly shortly. But we do want to get an idea of what you all think informally. Again, just your ideas. And I'd kind of like to go around the room and people give me their frank opinion, whether there's no way we're going to travel by August or and maybe you could, if you're doing some things like right now, we are doing some perhaps we're doing some Zoom right now. Perhaps we're not doing anything. Perhaps we're actually being able to get in touch with our grantees. And kind of give us your opinion and see what you feel about the way things look in your neighborhood. I'm just going to let this mic open, and kind of one by one, if anyone could contribute, we'd really appreciate that.
Hey, Mike, this is Alvin calling in from Central Florida, Sustainable Workplace Alliance. As things are right now, we're kind of playing things by ear. As you know, we are a training organization as well. Until June, that's right around the cutoff where we planned all of the classes in an online format. And again, we're just keeping our ears to the ground. So I would say that if we had the capability to do it, you know, even if that meant that we went with surgical masks, I don't foresee that being something that would stop us. But of course, if it were online, that is the way that we go too, but I think that the best way would, of course, be in person.
Alvin, are you do you have tablets to your grantees? Are they Are you using tablets now, or is that something you'd have to get going to get them started? You have them already?
No, we have to get going to get them. I meant for the all grantee meeting.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we do things. I did switch the subject on you. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry about that.
As far as your current training, are you doing anything with your students now? Is there anything you can do?
Yeah, we've done the live webinar format, and it's hard getting people to be interested in that because a lot of people, and I think on one of them, you mentioned something online, I automatically think, okay, I'm not going to be very engaged, especially if I'm at my home. But what we've done is that we still host our classes. We have our same trainers. And what we'll do is that we'll use our trainers to engage students. We'll call them out. You know, hey, so-and-so, can you read this chapter? And what that does is it keeps people on their toes. So in a way, you have to pay attention just in case they call your name out.
And so you actually do, your students have computers or tablets so they could participate in your program. Which is you're way ahead of everyone else, really. I think there's about 3 grantees that have that capability. So in that way, you're very fortunate in that part. Yeah, you're in the middle of your cohort, or
no, no, okay. we haven't actually gotten the grant. I'm saying just for how we're running.
That's how you're going to propose it. Okay, yeah. Excellent. And as far as it sounds like as far as a summer meeting, it doesn't sound real hopeful to you. I mean, in person.
I don't think so as of right now, as an organization.
Who's next?
This is Deborah Love. You know, one of the things I was thinking, I know we normally meet in August. Last year, the meeting was in December. I think, especially for new grantees, they'll get a lot more out of that person-to-person meeting. And if, of course, none of us know what it will be like in August. But I was thinking that if maybe in another month we might be able to get maybe an idea of what it's going to be like in August. Or even think about maybe which we should delay it later on in the year. But it's hard to say, and all of us are just kind of guessing because we have no idea. We don't know if there's going to be more cases later on in the fall. So I tell you what, to have something remotely would be better than not having anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess a lot of that would depend on when the RFP will be released because it's really good to make sure you still have training going on and all of that. And then if you have new grantees coming in, you want to make sure that you have some type of a meeting so they'll know how to really get started. So it's really a good program. It's really the annual meetings are so helpful, so helpful. So hopefully we can do it, but if not, we'll just have to do something remotely.
Right. Channing, while we have you on, we were anticipating a late summer RFA. Is that still hold, do you think?
So the way that we're looking at it right now, our proposed timeline was fall 2020. And as of right now, it's still looking like it's going to be in the fall. But as you say, we're not sure, you know, if things progress or get worse with COVID-19, if it will delay until later into winter of 2020.
That would be for the RFA, the request for proposal?
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
So it's only going to, it sounds like it might be a little later than we had anticipated. in late summer. We're probably moving more towards FY after in September, October, something like that.
Yeah.
That's really good to know. We usually put a timeline in a course, and we'll put one in the notes, assuming this is when the RFA comes out, this is what your program may look like and when you'll be training people. Of course, people who are in their last year of their grant are anxious sooner rather than later, but then we're all being really governed by this virus, and it's going to call the shots. Mm-hmm. Okay, who else will volunteer to let us know what they're doing?
Hello?
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Vanessa Frazier. I'm calling from the Boot Hill, Missouri Boot Hill. Vastly rural and sparsely populated. So there's some advantage to our location geographically because people live in the environment, but they don't understand it and they don't have time for it. And my work is the environment. And I just come off a Rubber Wood Johnson Foundation 3-year cohort, now alumni, and one of 40 people in the nation. And I was the only environmental educator. And they thought it was boring because of their various disciplines. But looking back now to what the role the environment plays, I'm getting a lot of email requests about education and different things that they need to know and don't understand. And we had job training classes here where I am. And a lot of them became employed, but it kind of fizzled out because they just didn't understand it. So this day and age, as you just said, there's nobody on the face of this earth that's not going to know what an N95 is from this day forward and the role the environment plays. So what we're doing, since we cannot, we're still under stay at home, which is due to be lifted Monday, we're doing virtual networking, and we're recruiting virtually. There's a lot of them calling, wanting to take the class. They want to understand more, but since we can't do social gathering, we're having calls, conference calls, because a lot of them doesn't have iPads or a phone mechanism where they can participate in a Zoom meeting. And so this educational part of what's going on is really key for me. And my last year at Robert Wood Johnson, they gave us $35,000 to do an existing project. And, of course, mine always go into my environmental issues and things that I deal with. And I bought PPE with that. So I have quite a bit to share with those that who are actually going to get out and do some things in the community to help seniors and make runs to the pharmacy and the stores. But basically right now we're doing a lot of educational networking and recruiting for when it'll be safe to go out.
You know, the Environmental Workforce job training programs have some real positives. They're, of course, mandatory. They take ASWAPR 1910-120, and they know how to don and doff protective gear, and they work with hazardous materials. They also know how to work in teams for those people who are placing. And, of course, we've got three audiences. I said those who are interested in applying for a new grant that we just talked about, the new RFA, those who have just gotten a new grant over the last cycle, and they're just beginning their cohorts and trying to figure out how to maneuver through their cohorts, how to recruit people, and how to proceed with their training and their classwork. And then we've got those who are caught in the middle, and that's a tough one, where you're halfway through your cohort and you may have gotten three of the key courses completed and you've got some more to go. And how do you keep your students engaged? And, of course, that's a matter of can you keep them engaged? Can you do some distance learning? Is it even possible if they don't have computers and phones? You brought up exactly what the issues are. Only two or three of our grantees have pads and computers and distance learning programs. In fact, Santa Fe spent, as they said in a couple of PLCs ago, they spent about $25,000 trying to just develop some curriculum. The iPads, the pads that they use, the tablets, were one of the less expensive issues. You can justify using tablets instead of print materials because it's almost cheaper to use a tablet, and you can preload them, and there's lots of good reasons for that. Those are things we're going to be looking at in the future here for those who will be proposing new proposals and those who are just getting started, where you may want to start thinking about shifting to those tablets. But even so, you're going to have to have some do some computer literacy and teach people how to use that and how to keep in touch. So all of those things have problems. We're going to start to address some of those issues in the next Connect newsletter, which will be coming out next week, just to start thinking about how do we work in this new era of COVID-19? Will we ever return to a normal like we did before? How will we address social distancing? How will we address recruitment? We may have to look at screening and recruitment much differently. We may, even when we do our labor market assessments and our community assessments, we may have to look at areas and choose areas that are close to the training site because of transportation issues. So there's a whole list of things. And, of course, all this depends on what happens with a vaccine. So it's all really up in the air. In the next issue of Connect, we're going to say that there are some things that it doesn't matter whether we have COVID-19 or not. They're going to be constant, developing partnerships, even some of the placement activities, doing your basic awareness, community awareness. You can do a lot of that whether we have COVID or not. The things that will primarily influence will be training and how we're going to train, and that's where we start to have to be thinking about these alternatives. Well, we got a little bit off that. Let's get back to a summer meeting. And does someone else have some ideas of summer or what they feel pro against, maybe, or some idea that they might have?
This is Andrea with Full Employment Council in Kansas City, and I don't anticipate that we would be traveling over the summer, probably later in the year. As someone mentioned, if it could be rescheduled, there are just so many uncertainties and liabilities in terms of employees and when, you know, what's available, what size groups. Because even in our region, even though the mandatory stay-at-home is being lifted, here we still are to follow the 10 groups or smaller requirements. So I wouldn't see us traveling in August.
Right. You've got some very good points. Whether anyone would want to get on a plane as we see it now and when that will even, and whether your parent organization would even allow you to get on an airplane is a fair question. Right now, most of us can't even get to our offices. So it's while we're a couple months away, it doesn't look promising that we're going to be able to get on an airplane and travel.
Hi, this is Renee Dooley from St. Louis Community College. And, I would just like to share that as much as I would like to participate in the meeting in August, I wouldn't foresee that happening. And it's another reason would be, you know, in order to attend, you have to book your flight and your hotel and everything in advance. So everything would have to be pretty okay in July in order for me to attend a meeting in August, and I probably, just the way things are going right now, I don't see July as being a time where everyone's or my organization would feel okay with travel. You know, right now we do have travel restrictions in place at the college, and I don't foresee that being lifted before summer's over. You know, pretty much all community events are canceled throughout the summer, so I don't see an exception being made for us in that regard. What would help me now, and I did miss the last call, so I apologize if things were already covered because I haven't caught up on the last meeting notes, would be, you know, new strategies for recruitment and screening, because traditionally I've done all that in person. So, you know, if there's any way we could put together or a survey of all the organizations to say, you know, how has your recruitment and screening changed, or how is it most effectively being, you know, completed right now, that would really help me. The August meeting I love, but to be honest, you know, once you've gone a few times, you kind of know the content. It's more about the networking. That's where the real value is in the networking and hearing and sharing amongst each other. You know, so a virtual meeting, although it would be good, you would be really, I think, missing out about 50% of the benefit of it, because we would not have that networking component like we would as we do with an in-person meeting.
Right.
So,
yeah,
sorry,
agree.
I kind of threw all my comments in one, but hopefully.
No, I like that. I really that's really helpful, and you're exactly right. I look forward to the meeting to get to meet people, and sometimes it takes just some discussion about something totally really to get a not good idea that comes up that somebody's doing, some concept or approach that they're using. You're exactly right, Renee. Where are you in your cohort? Are you in between, before, after?
Well, I just asked for an extension because I do have a little extra money in the current grant that needs to be spent, and we were going to do another, like kind of an extra cohort. However, I've been unable to schedule that. So
right.
It just keeps getting pushed off. And finally, I just requested for an extension because I just don't want to let that money disappear. Right. You know, I want to put it to some good use, but I'm just really on the fence on whether or not I can make that happen by September 30th. So right. I thought it was better just to ask for the extension. So, you know, to reduce the risk of that. And then the new grant, I delayed the start of it. So we were awarded a new grant, or I guess we will be awarded a new grant, but that will not begin until September or October, I forget now. So I won't run a new class under the new grant until January. So, you know, God willing, everything will be okay and back to normal by then, I hope. But I'm not sure what I'm going to do about the class I need to run now. So that's
right.
Why I'm asking about, you know, what some effective strategies, because I do a lot of it in person. You know, part of it is, can people show up on time? You know, the presentation. So I'm kind of struggling with that right now.
This is what we miss when not being together. There are life skills. For example, everyone coming in on time, even to the extreme where they're doing boot camps and everyone's doing exercises in the morning, or they have senior circles where they'll have a circle and the people who have been out of jail for a while, have been in jail, are wise and provide the young kids, who are the newer kids, ideas that they haven't thought of. And these gentlemen have been there, done that, and they act as mentors to the younger kids. You can't do that on Zoom. It's very difficult. And the relationships that are built up in your cohort, where someone wants to drop out and his friends won't let him because he knows the mentors don't want to give up on this person who is not self-assured or not feeling good about the program, or they'll boost them up. And we're going to miss all of that with distance learning. You're exactly right. And it's almost kind of trying to make the best of the worst of the situation. So, fortunately, in some ways, you're between cohorts, so I guess you're going to have some big decisions of whether you can construct some sort of a cohort, maybe do a little bit of training on computer skills or something, or prepare people for later on, or it might be hard to do a full program. But this is what we want to talk about in the next several PLCs of what are our alternatives, what might we be thinking about. And actually, whether there's COVID-19 or not, I think there's going to be some new technologies that will develop. For example, we may be doing 3 days of classroom and 2 days at home, work at home type thing. And now we have to think about, will that work for our population? Maybe. It might. And the students getting out of our classes will be computer literate. They'll be able to do distance learning. The advantage of strategies like that would be is if we run into another pandemic or a reoccurrence or something, those programs that have tablets, perhaps going to tablets, would be able to continue without a lot of disruption. So I think those are things we're going to have to be looking at in the next couple months. Other ideas?
Yeah, this is Edgar Cooper, Full Employment Council, Kansas City. I'm not going to feel safe traveling in August because, like some of the other people said, you know, we don't know what's going to be going on. One of the things that I got from the December EPA meeting training that we had was, and I forgot the gentleman's name, but he had there was a class where he talked about the N95. And he's one of the things that I got from that is, and I brought back to our organization, is we have to provide an awareness, just like an awareness of how to properly put on the mask, because a lot of people, they have the mask on, but they're not wearing the mask properly. So he had some people stand up and demonstrate how to put on an actual mask. So just because you have the mask on doesn't mean it's on correctly. So that's one of the things that I brought back to our organization, and I also bought some N95s when I came back in December.
Recycle Force has done an excellent job. Of course, they're an essential industry. They recycle anything with a plug, but they also train 100% ex-offenders that have just been released. We have nowhere else to go. And they've got their students teaching as mentors how to don and doff these outfits. They're also looking at community service where they can help sanitize buses, even instruct people on how to sanitize buses. And so they're on the forefront of now they're in a difficult situation, but actually one that works in that they are an essential industry. They kind of combine their recycling operation with their training operation. So they're wrestling with bringing students. They can bring students in to their facility given the proper safety conditions. And they're also able to provide some instruction. So they're in a very unique position. But your point is very good that our grantees have skills that are very valuable. And in fact, for those of you who are in the process of placement, and we don't have Uberl on, Abby wrote us a nice email and said we like to attend. We always attend the PLCs, but we can't go today because we're working with our WIB today. We've got a Zoom meeting. And we're in the process of student placement, and we've placed 27 people. Now, this is in addition to not just their Environmental Workforce Development Program, but some of their other programs in addition. And they're continuing work on the staff level because they've been doing a lot of work at home over the years. And they're meeting and placing students, and they're working with employers. And they're in this phase of let's place everyone we can. And they're not so much involved in the instruction part of it now, but they're doing a lot of work in coordination with their partners, which is very important, and with particularly their potential employers. So, but you bring up a very good point about the skills that our people have. Some of you may have people coming back who were employed and are not employed now. And that is an issue we'll probably talk about when we talk about retention and placement. But it's not only just about placing your existing students. You may have students that are alumni and were working for someone and they got laid off. And you may be able to help them with the experience in addition to the certifications and training that you've given them to get some new jobs. And that would be another thing you may want to consider in the coming months.
Hello, Michael. This is Paul Sammons, Recycle Force out of Indianapolis.
Yes, we were just talking about you, Paul. Great
and,
job.
You know, I think that everyone's walking this tightrope, you know, between social distancing and the health and safety of their participants and their organization as a whole. And partnerships are so critical. And what I mean by that is everything from, you know, the federal, state, local level, all the way to the grassroots organizations. And we're benefiting our participants from those partnerships. For example, we also sit on the Chamber of Commerce in Indy and the Workforce and Development and Education Council. So anytime there's an opportunity to have our participants as part of those plans that are being developed going forward, that helps, especially in times of crises, along with, you know, there's different coalitions and reentry coalitions and those things we're a part of from a legislative end. Also, our partnerships not only go to, you know, those organizations, but also with, let's say, for banks. I'd heard earlier in a phone call about iPads or computers for training. And we have approximately a dozen plus computers, and some of those have been donated from a bank that we have a partnership with. And so, you know, it gives our participants the access to the internet for training. We're continuing our training online and on the floor at the same time. So everything from OSHA to HAZWOP 40 to RCRA to, you know, construction OSHA. And we're experiencing, due to the high absenteeism rate out in the workplace, there's definitely openings in the service industry, in manufacturing, distribution, the supply chains as it relates to grocery stores, things of that nature. And we're having some success filling those with our workforce. But as you mentioned just a little bit ago, we are having some returns just because some of the, let's say, restaurant industries that have been shuttered, all those things. So we're bringing them back in, giving them additional training so they could be more marketable. But it is a fine line that we all walk right now. And in regards to August, and I know everyone's probably getting somewhat stir crazy, and we'll just have to see what the facts are at that time, but that's kind of out in the open. I'd love to come to that. You know, in L.A., that was the first time I had attended, and there's so much value in this connecting, meeting people in person and getting a better understanding. And in fact, for those that don't know, I come from the private sector, over 37 years in the private sector, and I didn't realize there was the other side of the EPA. Because everything has been, you know, regs and fines and, you know, those type of things on the private side that we have to contend with. And to know there's even a program like this was mind-blowing for me and my wife. She's, you know, she left the private sector, too, to get into this public forum. So there's just some amazing people doing some amazing things. And just to be a part of even a thing like this phone call for us, where the focus is on our participants and the safety and healthy of all those involved, that's a total paradigm shift for us, because before is basically, you know, the profit motive. So it's just an amazing opportunity if we can have it from that standpoint. If not, then we'll just have to wait to the next opportunity. But at Recycle Force, we're trying to do everything we can to further our participants along, which also includes, you know, finding them housing. We have a lot of homeless, and we partner up with the city of Indianapolis provide them work within their Department of Public Works, finding them housing. We've also partnered up with some organizations that provide free smartphones. So for those participants, especially the homeless that didn't have access to that, now they can be connected, along with food distribution in the low-income areas that the majority of our participants live in and their families and friends. So it's this balancing act. But at the end of the day, as I think you mentioned, this coronavirus, it's a kind of our new reality at this point in time, but people still need to eat. People still need to have a sense of value. People still need to have a sense of some type of normalcy in these troubling times, because otherwise there's a tendency to go back to, you know, what someone may be used to, and that's the last thing that we want to see happen, you know, especially when it comes to a lot of our participants have had, you know, self-medication, relapses, those things. And so far, we've been able to provide at least some stability by continuing our essential services within the community.
Well, Paul and you and Ken, you're doing such a good job. And one of the handful of job training programs that are able to even work in this environment that we're in. But you, as Ken said, I asked him a question on a PLC, what happens when they, how about dropping out of your program? He said, there's nowhere to go. We're at the end of the line. These are people who've come out of prison and they have nowhere else to go but our place. And you're doing some great work, and I'm really happy you're able to keep this going in this real difficult situation.
Well, we definitely, it's a team effort, and, you know, I just applaud everyone on this conference call to be part of this mission, because, you know, a lot of our people, there are very limited places for them to go to get these services. So, you know, somehow we'll work our way through this and keep our heads up high and be that stability for those that many of their lives aren't stable, you know. So right. Without getting too emotional, I'm not an emotional type of person. If we're not going to do it, who's going to do it?
Right. Well, we've always said that this is tough work, and it's difficult. And the people on this call and our grantees are to be commended, because they're working with very difficult situations, and it does have its own rewards. We used to say in some of the people that they all grantee, you get paid in hugs in this program, and that's pretty much the truth. You make people's lives. Well, I'm getting the impression, and we try to keep these not too long in the afternoon, but I'm getting the impression that it's just not going to happen in person as much as we really want it to. And we've got some good ideas, and we probably will be asking everyone. This is a participatory effort. If we go virtual, how might we do it? Do we do Zoom or Team, or do we have people send in some videos? And then, of course, the topics you might want to look at. So we're going to be looking at these in the next month and considering that, and we'll let you know when everything is when we're definitive in terms of everything in that sense. And of course, with the PLCs, we're going to continue not only talking how to deal with this crisis, but how we could prepare ourselves for the next RFA, and also if we're going to be training, how we might position ourselves. We may have to look at strategies in terms of distancing ourselves in training, maybe breaking our cohorts into two classes for each topic area so we have less than 10 people in a room. Those are the strategic kind of issues I think we can discuss in the future. Anyone have any comments or questions? Actually, we've got Channing on the line. We rarely get it. We've got Jeff Barnett on the line. Jeff has been a regional coordinator for a long time. Jeff, I won't say how long, but a long time. Jeff, do you have anything to say to the group?
Just hang in there. It's too early to say anything, and I'm not in a position to say anything. So other than keep doing what you're doing.
Jeff is a great mentor. He knows this program inside out. And as we get closer to writing proposals, I think he could provide some valuable insight. And I appreciate you coming on, Jeff. And Channing, we rarely get to have our future project officer online. Do you have anything to say?
No, I think, yeah. not at the moment, but just everybody, you know, hang in there. Hopefully this will pass pretty quickly, so that we can all sort of resume back to a normal way.
We'll of course, Heather will be checking in with you. We check in every couple of weeks to see what the current situation and thinking is in EPA so we can pass it on to all the grantees. And we appreciate you coming on and working with us. Any other comments?
I have a comment. This is Ness again. In light of what we're currently experiencing, worker safety is the most profound concern that I have, and I think about it throughout the day regarding phone calls. As I mentioned, Missouri is scheduled to go reopen on Monday, and essential workers especially are the ones that are calling and concerned, because in the rural communities across the country, these small employers and just some employers, they do not have PPE, and they don't provide training to their workers, and they don't know what to do, and they really would like to have a class or a training or something from the employer that would alleviate the concerns they have so that they can do their job properly. They know about OSHA, but they don't know the things other than safety and accidents, that information that OSHA provides. So I was wondering, what is it could we do in rural areas, especially those of us that are in right-to-work states, where if they're afraid for their safety, is no excuse, you can be fired. So there's a whole lot of concern around worker safety in this country.
That's a very interesting and important issue. And of course, our sister program, we work with NIEHS, the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, and they're very involved and concerned in health and safety of workers. In fact, it's the NIEHS program, which we'll write up. We've talked about in the past, but we'll talk about it in PLC and also put some papers out for you to learn more about NIEHS. They have a worker training program, but they're extremely concerned about the very area you're talking about. And, you know, one of the strong points of unions is they're very oriented towards worker protection. But if you're not in a union and you're in a small area where there's a single employer, this can be really problematic. And it's a question of how do you – and of course, we work with OSHA and working with those organizations the best you can. And you've pointed out an issue that I think is going to come bubble up to the top, because one of the biggest things we found over the years in environmental technology, it's the public opinion weighs heavily on what happens politically and as far as regulations. And through the years, I've seen pollutant after pollutant that has come to being because it brought the public attention. And of course, right now, with the meatpacking plants, this is exactly what's happening. It'll be interesting to follow to see what happens in terms of regulatory compliance and inspections and what happens because of all of this. And, you know, it's a shame that it has to take a meat shortage and all this harm that's happening to workers to have this happen. but you've got a good point, and we'll be talking about NIHS and worker training in the future, so that I would say stay tuned.
You know, one of the problems that seeing a lot of is a lot of information out there that is just not true. And you have people who are just depending on what they are hearing out there. I heard one person who actually mentioned that they were telling people that surgical masks are better than N95. And yes, 99.9. And I said, where are you getting all this information from? And you're out there trying to sell some masks. I said, you know, that's not the area you should be in without knowing the facts. And when you put information out there, so a lot of people think if they have just the regular surgical mask and they are out there that they are protected from all. And which is not true. So it's, and this is affecting the community. And in the way to really get more information out there, you know, people who have been through training, who know a lot of what the masks are really supposed to be used for, they know about N95, they know what percentage that is saying that it possibly could really protect you, but it's just so much information out there that's not correct, and it's affecting our people. When you walk around, you see all the people around. You see, I've seen parents with an N95 on, and then the children walking behind them with nothing on, thinking that it only affects people of a certain age. And so, you know, it's just all this misinformation is killing folks.
Yeah.
So I think that people who've been through training programs and all of that, the more information that's out there, that the correct information could really save a lot of lives. And this is separate just dealing with just, you know, concentrating on workforce and training people. But this is a serious issue, and people don't know how serious it is because so much information out there that's just not true. And even from... I'm sorry. Yeah,
that would be great.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that's one of the main concerns that I'm seeing just watching people and people getting into things for the wrong reasons. And it's really, it can cause people to lose their lives. So we got to make sure that information. And a lot of the community, they have no idea who to go to, what website to go to make sure you're getting the real information, because there's so much stuff out there that's just not true. And as people in the environmental profession, we just need to really make sure that the information that's put out there about masks are correct, and that we're out there kind of leading and pushing that, because that could actually save a whole lot of lives. And I'm really concerned about that, because, you know, this is something we are seeing every day.
That's right. And that's your business, and you're aware. And, you know, our grantees and our participants in our grantees programs are mentors. You don't think of your students as being mentors, but they are, mm-hmm. because you're going to teach them the proper way of wearing this material, what their limitations are, and, mm-hmm. and how to work with them, and they'll go back into their community and they'll be the mentors. They will be the knowledgeable mm-hmm. ones.
Right. And that's so important, you know, because the more people we have out there telling people the truth, the, you know, the more lives that we will save. And because this COVID-19 is no joke. It's just really no, it's serious, and a lot of people are not taking it as being serious. So,
well, thank you, and thank you, everyone. I apologize two things. One, we were getting some beeping through there. We had to tolerate, and of course, we are a little longer than we normally are, but we'll continue this in 2 weeks. Our next PLC will be May 6th on Wednesday, same time, same place. If you're not getting the notes, or if you want to sign someone up or whatever, or comments, if you have any comments and like to tell us what you're doing and didn't get a chance to talk today, just send them, reply to the notes, and just write us a blurb, and we could include it in the notes and your ideas. And Heather, do you want to give your email? You could either return your comments in the notes you get on Friday, or go ahead, Heather, and your email.
Yeah, absolutely. It is Heather Ballou at HKBALLOU at EICC.edu. Again, that's HKBALLOU at EICC.edu. And I really want to thank you guys. What amazing participation today. We really appreciate all your insight and feedback. And, you know, just that was a really great conversation to help moving this topic forward.
Okay. Well, you all have a safe week, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Okay, thank you. Be safe.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Have a good one.